You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As thousands of Rangers fans made their way to Ibrox on Saturday 19th of October, many will have gone through their normal routine. Had a drink in the same pub, grabbed some lunch at the same burger van, bought a programme or a fanzine. On that afternoon, the 61st edition of Follow Follow was hot off the press, and like six of the covers since his arrival, Paul Gascoigne was front and centre. This, however, was an edition like no other. In some of the others, He's Lost the Plot could have been an accompanying headline that was ironic or full of mirth, what followed in the very first page was anything but. 41 of the 42 pages already seemed a little out of date, this week's news being too close to publication for the normal contributors to digest. It was full of moans about Zurich and Auxerre, but not yet Amsterdam. As editor, Mark Dingwall had just enough time to ensure that the cover and the first page editorial didn't miss. Ibrox, no place for a wife beater, was how it started. After starting the piece with familiar moans about drink driving and the miscellany of misbehaviour at Rangers, he followed up with some of the most remarkable language in the history of the publication. "This latest episode is the final straw," he said. "Either he goes or Walter goes. Paying some of these clowns the money we do, it's not too much to ask them to behave like human beings, is it?" Our beloved vice chairman is quoted in Friday's Scotsman. "If Gascoigne plays on Saturday, scores a few goals and we win, ask the fans what they think." You can know what I think now, Donald. I think he's a wife-beating bastard who is a disgrace and an embarrassment to us all. To discuss a difficult action-packed part of 96-97, this is Dominant, of course. I'm Martin Ramsey, your host as ever, and I'm joined by Andy McGowan. Good evening, Andy.
Hello, Martin. Nice topic you start off with, makes a change.
Well, it's we have to deal with what we have to deal with, I'm afraid. Alan Bradley's here as well. How are you?
Hi, Martin. Yeah, good to be back. I think it was several months ago when Andy and I were on together. This is a really difficult one to, and I think you wanted really the best team. I mean, John and Davey, they're doing all right, but I see where you're coming from, Martin. It's getting to the end of a vital time. You want the best guys on.
Inter-pod rivalry never fails to amaze me. Okay, well, let's deal with this Gascoigne story. The fallout from that Channel 4 documentary was still reverberating around. It was still making news. Rangers had actually stumbled for the first time in the league at Easter Road. Gascoigne wasn't particularly good. He took his new wife and family to Gleneagles on the Sunday, just before he flew out to Amsterdam with the team squad on the Tuesday. He had a great day, swimming with the kids, enjoying the wildlife. I think they were playing with hawks. And then dinner time, he mixed his drinks, champagne and whiskey, and there was an argument about Gascoigne's family, and the argument got very heated indeed. The whole dining room could hear it. Cheryl stormed away. and Gascoigne followed her. In his book, he said, "I headbutted her and threw her to the floor. Her finger was broken, so she was screaming in agony. I tried to click the finger back into place, and that really made her shriek." Bianca and Mason, about 10 and 7, were in the room next door with the nanny, listening to it all. I found out later that Bianca was so upset she wanted to take a kettle of boiling water and come and pour it all over me. Fortunately, the nanny calmed her down. The next day, Shell took the kids and left, telling me she wasn't coming back. I did nothing to stop her. I just accepted it. And yes, I had pushed her around a bit before, but nothing as bad as this. What I'd done the previous night was terrible. And at the time, I didn't even say sorry. I knew I'd done wrong, but I couldn't bring myself to apologise. The night itself, Walter Smith, possibly in another situation with more options available to him, could have just taken Gascoigne out the picture, out the limelight. He didn't. He was the bare bones, effectively playing without a striker. Gascoigne and Loudrup kind of playing up front against Ajax. It didn't last long. Gascoigne was sent off after 28 minutes, lashing out petulant kick to Winston Bogard. Rangers were 1-0 down at the time, Stuart McCall losing his man, Danny, for 1 minute. And that was enough, obviously, to score. And then the second before half-time, Goff told him just to go and deal with the De Boers in the middle of the park. He would take care of Danny. He did not take care of Danny. And Ajax were 2-0. Gascoigne hid in the toilet at half-time. Archie Knox was going ballistic, berating McCall. It was his job, the one thing they prepared for, this kind of man-marking job on Danny. And McCall said, "Well, no, Goffey told me to go and deal with the threat in the middle. We're a man down here, he would take care of it." Knox said, "You're never fucking wrong, are you?" And McCall, whose knee was swelling up, he'd been carrying a bad knee injury for quite a while, he had an ice pack, he chucked the ice on the floor, smashing everywhere. It wasn't a particularly good situation. He should have been taken off, actually, but he was fizzing, wanted to continue, and eventually that would be his last game for Rangers for some time, the rest of the season. A few knee injuries for Stuart McCall. Ended up 4-1. Two late goals sandwiched in between was an Ian Durant consolation. Another heavy defeat to this catalogue of continental catastrophe. Andy, can we just deal with the night itself first? Because we don't know of the domestic situation that would come out in the tabloids the next day. I don't know if you were in Amsterdam, but it was yet another mess, tactical mess, effort, the players missing, the players that were there just look either shattered or shell-shocked. We're ticking these off by now.
I was there without a ticket, and didn't get in, but I remember, you know, it was a big game because Ajax are a big name at any time, but that new stadium, there's a lot of expecting Rangers fans there. We've got a team, and so by this point, we've probably been beaten twice, Zurich and who was the French team?
Auxerre.
So the Champions League campaign slipping away for us, but, you know, we've still got expectation. We've got top players, or supposed top players in there. The night was a disaster from start to finish, and we were outclassed. You know, 4-1, my recollection is that, you know, that did not flatter Ajax one bit. If anything, we got off lightly. And correct me if I'm wrong, Martin, but this would have been a night over Mars and Finney de George and the likes of that. Ripped us to shreds down the wings. Their width was incredible. You just couldn't live with the pace in them. And the Gascoigne sending off kind of epitomised how far off it we were, because that's what he was. He was off it. And he gets sent off because of the frustration or whatever you might call it. But it was a sobering night. Not for me, I was in Amsterdam, but for Rangers.
Alan, the team embarrassment, but, you know, he's had that sending off in Dortmund in that final game. You just know the press are kind of waiting for this. We didn't know what else they had in store. He did. He knew that the press had that story. They were going to run with it. His head is wasted, even at the best of times. But was there another sense of just shame, disappointment, embarrassment with him particularly, and again the team?
Yeah, there was. I always had, as much as he was a genius and all the positive stuff he brought, he was an old Scottish, an accident waiting to happen, and it would happen periodically. A wee bit like the, you know, the Morelis over the past wee while, when it was like the last thing we want is, you know, him to act in a certain way, and he does. This one, I was like Andy as well. We had actually gone I think it was October week. So myself, my wife and my daughter went over, met David Best and his wife. A few days in Amsterdam, same, tried to get tickets, couldn't, and ended up watching it in one of the squares. But again, like Andy, at that point in time, you're thinking, you don't know, you know, if we can settle and just see how things go. We knew they were a crack inside, but again, the minute that happened, it was like, here we go. You know, it's bad enough going there with 11, but when we're down to 10 so early, and Danny, I think, had scored first, hadn't he? And then, yeah, obviously, Gaza gets sent off. Danny, two great headers as well, you know, by him. But at that point in time, it was a case of, at half-time, kind of, how many is it going to be? But really, really disappointed. And I don't know. We didn't know, obviously, about that story. But as you say, some of the things that had been happening previously in some of the other seasons, it was just like, what is it with these guys? They just keep shooting us in the foot. And, you know, and then obviously the information came out later on. So Wijeran, he did well to get back, I think, 3-1. And they scored again off De Boer, a kind of rebound. So, it was just, I don't know, it just seemed kind of typical of that old, the indiscipline in the squad, some of the behaviours. And obviously Gaza, as much as I say, was brilliant. It was just like, you know, this is the last thing that we need.
Yeah. Well, there's indiscipline on the night. And then, of course, the stories that came out the next day kind of rendered any footballing chat redundant. We'd had that conversation before, really, about where Rangers fit in this European setup. We'd come to it again, but this obviously took precedence. I want to talk about the reaction to the story. First of all, we'll come to the fan stuff in a minute, but I want to talk about the club or the football reaction, because 25 years later, I think it does tell a story about time past, but also maybe one that was just kind of coming to fruition. Rangers fined him 2 weeks' wages, £20,000. Smith kind of suggested, well, not kind of, heavily suggested, that this was the final chance, really, on the park. Again, kind of more focused on his lashing out on Bogard. In terms of the off-field stuff, wash the hands of it. Smith said, from the point of view of Rangers Football Club, I don't feel in any position to comment on their private life. Obviously, I'm disappointed for both of them about all that has happened. Donald Finlay went further. None of us here are going to get involved in someone's private life. If Paul Gascoigne or anyone else concerned with the club asks for help or advice, we will give it. We are not going to interfere. It is entirely a private matter. We will stand by anyone who works for the club who gives us 100% loyalty. They will get the same back. There is no reason to discuss it with them. I don't intend to discuss it with him. It's up to the lad. If he wants to speak to me or anyone else, we are here. Really, none of our business, nothing to see here kind of approach. Smith's focus was very much on his business, whether Gascoigne would feature against Aberdeen on the Saturday or indeed for Rangers to have it again. A lot of talk that week that Rangers were going to cut the losses, sell to Villa or Spurs or whomever in England. Wasn't the only manager pressed with this. Glenn Hoddle, the new England coach, would face it in a few weeks' time, and the next time that England met up, from the fans, from media, and from women's rights group, who were saying, look, even a temporary benching or complete, you know, being completely dropped from the squad would send a message to millions of men that this isn't acceptable. But if you prioritise points ahead of women's safety, what's this really saying? Gascoigne would start against Aberdeen and he would start for England in Tbilisi, Georgia. But I find it, Andy, inconceivable that if this happened now, certainly allegations that weren't contested, we know of some kind of allegations in the similar ballpark that are furiously denied and whatever else by the people involved. This wasn't. So there was a kind of acceptance that this happened almost immediately. I can't see a Rangers player or any high-profile player playing for a high-profile club playing immediately on the Saturday and possibly certainly for England and that club ever again. It's very much a different time.
Yeah, this, if you put this in today's context, and I hate to use the phrase, but people know what I mean, the cancel culture. You know, there was no spin doctoring back then as we know it now. The art of PR was not something that existed, but nowhere near to the degree that we have nowadays where, you know, you can get the narrative out first. I think Rangers were bad at that. At the best of times, you know, for really, really simple stuff. If this happened nowadays, then the only kind of parallel I can think of is the likes of Greenwood, Mason Greenwood at Man United, where he's basically, his career has come to a shattering halt, and the likelihood of him playing football at any level again is pretty slim unless he's exonerated. So with Gascoigne, this was big news, huge news. You know, a year, maybe 18 months before, they're in Hello Magazine for the wedding, you know, the full booner, very, very high profile. The amazing thing
is that they got married in the July.
Is it?
And then they've only been married 16 weeks or something.
Jeez. I mean, I can't remember my main wedding. So the fact happened in a public place, high profile place, you know, the Loch Lomond or wherever it was the place to be.
Glen Eagles, sorry.
So the fact that this hadn't hit the papers, I find astounding looking back on it. The fact that Rangers played them that night or the next day or whenever it was, I find astounding as well. Disney shine or show the likes of Smith, Murray and the decision makers at Ibrox in the greatest of lights looking back, but we're looking at it through the lens of today where it would be no far off a career ender.
Yeah, I think
that is what would happen nowadays.
I think it is a career ender. Alan, we have to be careful with history, that we judge it by the time. And there were column inches suggesting that Rangers and England were wrong to just effectively wash their hands of it, brush it under the carpet, just move on, because football's more important. So it wasn't as if everyone just, shook their, nodded their head. Although a lot of the sports columnists were a wee bit surprised, because you're not more annoyed, let down by what happened actually on the pitch. So it does indicate the sign of the times. But this isn't a glowing moment in Rangers Football Club, I don't think, the way that we handled this.
No, and as you say, okay, we're looking at it now, but even at that point in time, I honestly thought Rangers should have been far more, stricter, or in terms of the kind of fine they gave them. To me, they should have really publicly went on and said, obviously, you know, the club are really dealing with this one, how disappointed we were. Getting into the, okay, we're going to have to look at what's going on behind the scenes. Talking about if he needs support, he can come and talk to us, then we'll look at it. I just think that was out of order to me. They should have proactively said, we've seen these issues that you've had before, even before you came to Rangers. This, I mean, wife, you know, what you've done there with the wife and so on, absolutely disgraceful. Maybe looking at how could we support them, but I feel and I think the statements coming out there with it's a private matter, it's no, we don't really want to, I don't know. I think even at that point in time, I thought they should have been far more stricter on them. And again, with me, with the old, thinking of even the likes of the Bill Smiths and the Willie Waddles and all that, carrying on like that, you know, when you're as part of Rangers, I just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't seem right to me. Looking at it now, my goodness, but as I say, even at that point in time, I just thought Rangers, it was as if they would just kind of put it under the carpet a wee bit, and I think more should have been done at that point in time.
Yeah, and yeah, just again, just as one final point on the club and the football reaction, if that's a lesser light, or if it is Gascoigne, but he's been here for 3 years, 9 and 10 are done, he's coming to the end, do they still make the same decision?
Yeah.
Because this... Everything is obsessed and hinges on this week-by-week claustrophobia around this season. And I don't think there was any chance that Rangers were losing one of the two gods in order to jeopardise that.
No, and I'm almost ashamed to say it, but I'm 20-year-old. I'm not exactly worldly-wise. My first thoughts around this, or my main worry, I should say, around this was how's it going to affect the season, which is a terrible thing to say, you know, but that was the thought process at the time. You know, I remember the pictures of Cheryl came out, and you know, this was a significant altercation. It was terrible. But this was the fever with our grip, Martin, wasn't it? It was nothing, it was all consuming to the point where we are contemplating the moral decay of turning a blind eye to this.
Yeah.
And we did as a club, but more than that, there's a lot of support, and I'm including myself in this, with the caveat that I was 20-year-old and daft, that was the kind of thought process. We can't lose this guy because there's too much at stake.
It might have been an age thing, as you say, Andy. I mean, I'm like 36. I've been married for 12 years. I've got a young daughter. I don't know whether maybe I was just looking at it, you know, through a different lens. So,
Did you want him fired, Al?
No, but what I would want is Rangers to come down and say this is absolutely disgraceful. It's
outrageous. He's out for 5 games, or what?
And it would be out for longer, for goodness sake, you know. I definitely thought, and as much as it would harm him. To me, I don't know, I would have made about this is so important to us going for the 9 and so on, but hold on a wee minute here. We have got standards at Ibrox as well, and I would actually have put them out for, a couple of months or something. Yeah. But that's...
Yeah. See, there was voices there, but...
Just old guys like me.
Well, you know. I wouldn't like to say that they were in the minority, the majorities. I couldn't tell, but, you know, you quoted Mark Dingwall there, Martin, which was obviously a very big centre influence, the follow-up fanzine at that time, certainly for my generation. And it was the first time it was kind of put to us that, you know, there is more to life than the 9 in a row, 10 in a row. But it was certainly a moral quandary, which somebody's looking back failed badly. And I think the club, to answer your question, I think the club really, really made an arse of that.
Well, I mean, yeah, Mark Dingwall was vociferous, and that really did make waves at the time. He has since pedalled back a wee bit on that. But he was in the majority. News of the World put a poll, suggested that 65% of Rangers fans wanted him sacked, although I think it's fair to say any tabloid poll relating to the Old Firm is always susceptible to some mischief. But look at the wider picture in terms of his England future. 64% of 5 Live listeners, 76% of Talk Radio, 71% of people on Teletext, 67% of the readers of the Journal in Newcastle, his hometown, thought that Hoddle was wrong to select him again, at least so soon. It was the next edition of the fanzine that we got the chance to see a debate on it, and fans with different views. One regular contributor, maybe from the left of the Rangers support, ranting Robert Burns. I'll read this out because it's quite interesting. It seems ridiculous that an institution like Rangers, whose supporters regard Smith as the godfather of the club, should seek to make light of or cover up such iniquitous behaviour by one of its players. Is the quest for 9 or 10 in a row to take precedence over all else? Will our players be allowed to do just as they please with our hard-earned cash and live their lives according to the rules of the gutter? Where is the guidance? Where is the leadership? Where is the example to younger players? I'm fed up with the drink driving, the philandering, the Rangers player on the front page rather than the back page, and it's about time the men at the helm of the club got a grip and reminded the players that without the fans they're nothing, and the patience of the fans, on-field performances notwithstanding, is being sorely tested. If 10 in a row is achieved at the expense of the club being reduced to a haven for sewer rats, will we be happy? I want players I can watch, can cheer, can applaud without thinking I'm giving a mixed message. He asked, would Gascoigne scoring against Aberdeen or the fans cheering his name, if I cheered his name, would that say that it was all right to beat your wife as long as you put the ball on the pokey on a Saturday? If so, count me out. He did have support, of course. It's a sad day when the climate of retribution in this country can turn a black eye into a war crime, wrote the Downhill Hack, a Partick Thistle fan really, an old school football journalist, whereas others pointed out the same weakness is so often ignored in other icons like Sean Connery, John Lennon, and some argued that drink driving was far worse, far more dangerous than, and I quote, giving the wife a scalp. A window into the mindset of the time, which is still there, sadly, but it's certainly eroded over the past 25 years, Andy. But what I found interesting was something that we are very familiar with, especially in social media, when there is a social disgrace, when there is a matter of controversy. I'm thinking Uruguay are playing on my television at the moment in the background. I'm thinking, you know, Luis Suarez and the Liverpool T-shirts. There is an inbuilt defence mechanism with supporters. This tribal loyalty comes to the end, especially if it's been someone who has been maligned and attacked from the start. He is your guy. And I found that instant response by a lot of fans illuminating, because we are used to that in this day and age, are we not?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yep, and that may actually go somewhere explaining the my reaction, because I spoke a few weeks back about the, you know, when he played for England against Scotland and the McNee dynamics and the fact that the whole of the country seemed to be against them, and when we he'd given them what they wanted, you know, there was some black rejoicing in the fact that he'd failed so badly. But for a human level, you know, there's a lot of affection for Gascoigne within the Rangers support, and you know, you'll have family. We've all had family members that fell short of the standards that you would hope you have yourself. And do you abandon them? No, you generally don't, unless it's something totally off the scale. So it was a hard time to quantify your feelings and to get the moral compass correct. That is correct. There was a defence mechanism. And I think the opposite was there, Martin. There was folk that actually went OTT and their condemnation because they felt, you know, I need to be sure that folk don't think I'm accepting this. So it was that kind of uber reaction to prove that you are not even mildly on the fence or thinking about giving this guy an ounce of sympathy. So I do remember that. Some of the reactions were extreme to the point there was no balance, well, as much balance as you can have in a conversation like this.
I think because Andy, I wasn't, and you know, you guys were all follow, even before things went electronically, and you know, you were reading all those fanzines, and I wasn't. Mine was just purely my kind of personal opinion between my kind of close friends and, you know, about them. But I would never do that kind of standing up and look at me, everyone, this is my... But that was just my kind of view. I just felt that he needed support. I feel that the... Even if you looked at us as a business, even when we got him, you know, everyone knew he had problems with drink. Water goes over, it's all a great laugh, the way they carry on with Jimmy Five Bellies. We knew this was kind of waiting in terms of the drink side of it and his behaviour. But again, like the George Best stuff, people were prepared to, because in society, well, maybe he goes over the top, but we're prepared to kind of, you know, deal with that one. Even so, with me as well, I was like, and some of the Rangers players, they're overdoing it, but fine. I was actually happy to accept that. That's okay, because they're on the park, they're playing football. But it's just suddenly when it came to a guy actually hitting a woman, hitting his wife, all of, you know, that's where with me it took it over. But as I say, to me, Rangers should have made a bigger stand on it, say this is disgraceful, here's the punishment, but then do the support bit as you would have done as a business and say, the guy does need help, but let's proactively see how we can, you know. But it's as if they just went, I think the statements were probably, it was kind of nothing to see here. What he does in his own pride, it's nobody else's business, which I don't agree with when it comes to something as severe as that. That was all, you know. Yeah.
In the end, the response to this was pretty utilitarian. Smith needed him. Gascoigne's drinking is now an issue. He writes in his book, written in 2004, about turning up at Ibrox for a game and, well, reeking, basically, after a big night the night before. And Smith told him to get changed, get his suit back on and go, which he did. Now, Gascoigne played in every home game up to the Glen Eagles incident, but two. One of them was Alania Vladiklav-Kaz when he was suspended, so that couldn't have been it. So it would have had to have been the first game of the season, first league game of the season against Raith Rovers. And if so, if that's correct, his recollection with the dates, then, I mean, what a tone to set. Another time, Smith called him on a Friday night just to check up on him, and he was fine. Said, right, you're coming for dinner with me and Archie. Game the next day, they had a meal. Gascoigne had a glass of wine. Smith said, oh, you failed the test. But they had a laugh about it. Said, don't be silly, you're playing tomorrow. Motherwell, Rangers won 5-0. Gascoigne would score a hat-trick. So, kind of confused messages at times. He didn't come out for the warm-up against Aberdeen. And he was quite, I'm going to say, sheepish, pardon the pun, until 28 minutes when he whipped this free kick with venomous curl and dip right into the top corner. There was no awkward silence, no kind of eerie mixed reaction or muted applause. It was wild as ever. Jock Brown said, the perfect answer to the troubles of the week, as if the violence of his head and fist could be washed away by the genius of that right foot. But the truth is that for many, it was. And especially when Loudrop put Rangers 2 in front with an equally brilliant goal, Donald Finlay's remark that all be forgotten if he scores and Rangers win had a real resonance. The problem, small one, was that they didn't. Aberdeen grabbed one back before the break and then controlled the second half, Billy Dodds' equaliser late in the game being well deserved. And what had been a serene start of, you know, kind of domestic bliss that we talked about last week was turning sour. All looked well on the 12th of October. Rangers were at Easter Road. Jörg Albertz was just getting his free kick sights in and put Rangers in the lead with an absolutely blistering shot. But Hibs, recently managerless, they'd sacked Alex Smith, rallied, got a Darren Jackson penalty, and then, which by the way came from a Bjorklund foul clearly outside the box, and then a brilliant strike from Graham Donald put them in front. And then, incredibly, Brian Laudrup missed two penalties, one straight after the other, hit the bar with one, and then Leighton saved the retake. And a Van Hooijdonk goal was enough to give Celtic the advantage and claw that back to 2 points. And then, after that Aberdeen draw, Celtic would play on the Sunday on TV at Tynecastle. And after 51 minutes, the whole momentum of the season looked to be shifting. Van Hooijdonk had scored 2 goals either side of half-time, kind of penalty box strikes. And if they tailed out at 2-0 for maybe 10 minutes, they'd probably seen it out. But Scott Cameron got one back immediately. And then very late on, Davey McPherson, of all people, headed in an equaliser. And there was something very inevitable about those watching and cheering at home that, given the chance, this team do not capitalise. Well, if it was a let-off, it didn't last for long. The 5-0 hammering on Motherwell showed that old flair. Gascoigne did a hat-trick, Loudrop had two, but yet another 2-2 slip up the following Saturday against a Raith Rovers side who were rock bottom of the table and only had one win. Celtic didn't falter that day. A 1-0 win against Aberdeen being enough, Andrew, to take them top of the table, albeit on goal difference. This was worrying, but it kind of came from nowhere. That start to the season, perfect, including a defeat of Celtic. I was at Easter Road that day. We looked in cruise control. And then, all of a sudden, you've got 1-1-4, the worst league form since, you know, for 18 months. We know the European stuff, we'll talk about that in a minute, but we know the priority this season, and we're no longer top of the table.
No, and we kind of knew this was coming for Celtic, because the year before there had been wafer thin margins when you looked at it in the cold light of day, and they had a decent, exciting team when you look through. If we went to 11 on their day, they could be an attractive team. and cause anybody problems. But these had kind of felt self-inflicted. You know, Hibs, Aberdeen, Raith Rovers are three games, even although two of them are away from home, that you're expecting us to take full points. And it was unnecessary, and it was nervous. My recollections at the time were that, you know, everything was in the balance. I don't think we thought, oh, here we go, this is going to slip away from us. I think we'll be a bit more confident than that. But we knew we had a real challenge on our hands, and that this wasn't going to be one of the canter leagues that we'd seen in the past. And Celtic's tails were up. But that had happened before. Celtic's tails had been up 100 times before at different points in this series to now, and invariably we'd usually slapped it down.
Alan, were we concerned? I mean, is it just complacency then? You know, we're 5 points clear, we're 100%, we're banging goals in for fun, we go ahead at Easter Road with an absolute crackerjack from the new signing and just this conveyor belt of signings. Was it just that, or, you know, obviously the Gascoigne situation maybe impacting Champions League disappointment perhaps as well? But that kind of run we haven't seen. I mean, literally haven't seen since, you know, the end of the 94-95 season when we'd won the league. I mean, this is the kind of cry to those poorer seasons, isn't it?
I think you're right, and I think Andy makes a good point too in terms of Celtic and the likes of Van Hooijdonk and Di Canio and some of the players they had, their tails were up. We always had that maybe they'll collapse. But no, at this point in time, and I think because of the poor form, obviously in Europe too, it was a wee bit like this season with us. You know, the confidence was beginning to go down. I think we had quite a few players kind of missing as well at periods. And as you said, we'd out of four games, I think we'd won one of them. So now for me, going to Parkhead, they're really up for it. It was definitely going to be touch and go. You're hoping that through the period and the rest, there are the months between there and the end, obviously Rangers will come through. But I certainly thought at that point in time, and I think I was actually down in Cheltenham at some sales conference, so I had to end up sitting watching it myself in the hotel room while everyone else was doing whatever they do at sales conferences. You know, but it was a really, I mean, it was probably one of the most exciting Old Firm games.
We'll get to that in a minute.
At that point in time, it was very much for me, shit, at Parkhead, we really need to get something out of this. Yeah.
So they're on a form, there's injuries to McCall, McCoy's, Gorham being added to the other list, disciplines out of control. It did give hope again to many that this autumn was finally going to be the changing of the guard, and this long era was coming to an end. Maybe underlined by the news on the 25th of October that after 10 years of service, Richard Gough would be leaving for foreign climes at the end of the season. I think it was his intent, Andy, to go while he was successful, prompting a few to question his confidence in how successful we would be, you know, next year in the record-breaking season. And a very interesting interview you gave to Scotland on Sunday around this period, obviously, where form is dipping. The problem is that people now want instant success. It might actually do this club no harm not to have success for a few years, and for the supporters who have jumped on the bandwagon to know what it's like from the other side of the fence. If we didn't win the championship, it wouldn't be a disaster, but there are too many parochial attitudes here to appreciate that. That's a far cry from the 36 cup finals that he said his side were desperate to win at the start of the season. Is that a sign of the pressure that they've been faced with? Again, we've got this trip to Parkhead, we've been behind the eight ball going there. Is it just this way of dealing with that pressure? Because it's very, very un-Gough words to say.
The whole thing I found weird at the time. So he's going to America to play for Kansas City, and the, you know, American League at that time wasn't what we know now as MLS. It was back, kind of start again. And to announce it was a strange thing. To know that it wasn't going to be here for, you know, the 10 in a row season, which we were fully expecting, was a weird thing as well. And the point you make about the contrast in terms of tone in those two interviews, it was a wee bit, I find that a wee bit condescending now, because it's like, you know, the fans don't know what they're talking about because it's unrealistic, you know. But we all knew the rules of the game here. We all knew that we could get to nine, and if we didn't win it, then the previous eight weren't much value, to be quite honest. So it could have been pressure doing strange things to somebody that was fairly stoic and implacable. I would probably put it down to that rather than any kind of grand design to be talking smart in a press or a media release to divert or reduce pressure or puncture pressure, because it would never happen. There's nothing you could say that could have taken the public opinion of the Rangers support and say, maybe if Goff's got a point, if we don't win this, then we're being unrealistic. That's never going to happen.
It kind of sounded defeatist, and not that he'd conceded it, but it just sounded, you'd be expecting a Rangers captain, I don't know, even if privately thought that, it just didn't seem right to me. It should still have been, I think he should have kept quiet about it. But even if you're over at Celtic, you'd be going, hold on a wee minute here. Here's a captain who's won so many of these titles now. Oh, and he's talking about pressure, and maybe if they don't, I don't know. Again, who was advising players at that point in time to, in terms of the kind of PR side, I don't know. But he definitely looked as if the pressure, I don't know, was kind of beginning to get to him. But as you say, Andy, I mean, everyone who's been at Rangers and for that length of time, they know the rules, don't they? And you've just got to go on with things.
Well, being behind Celtic, albeit temporarily, was something new. The Champions League experience was becoming all too recognisable. Similar to the Juve games, the home game against Ajax was more spirited, more organised, despite some real selection nightmares for Smith. He had to blood youngsters like Greg Shields and Scott Wilson into a starting lineup that was missing Gorham, Goff, McLaren, Ferguson, McCall, Gascoigne and Jury from that wonderful cup final side just 5 months before. Interestingly, his bench that night had three players on it, all forwards, McCoy, Van Vos and Bo Anderson, but he opted not to start with a recognised striker at all, Laudrup and Miller kind of reprising a sort of partnership that they had initially started a couple of years before. Thankfully, unlike Juve, Ajax were quite content just to hold on to that 1-0 lead and not push for any more. It could have been different though. 59th minute, the ball broke to Jorg Alberts just left of the penalty spot, but with players on the floor out of range and just Van der Sar to beat, he blasted it high and wide. Seemed to be in two minds whether to use placement or force. He was nearly in tears afterwards. I made a big mistake. I think if we had scored, we would have gone on to win the game. I think the team played well, but that was my worst game for Rangers. It's barely remembered as one of those big Rangers misses, perhaps because of the futility of that contest by that point. Or won a few weeks later. But I think the important thing is he did not allow it to ruin his career, which would, of course, be illustrious and heroic. To tie up the Champions League, we'd finally get a win against Grasshoppers on the 20th of November at Ibrox. McCoist finally getting his Champions League goals. And that was our first win in the Champions League since Scott Nisbet's off-cutter away back in March 93 against Bruges. What is telling about this game and the 2-1 defeat in France, the final games? They were not shown live by STV. They opted that night at Ibrox to show Manchester United against Juventus, which was, of course, coming from the main ITV feed. And this, I think, just beautifully highlights or underlines the increasingly peripheral role that Rangers are having, even when they do reach the final stages of this competition. We are an absolute footnote, and even Rangers fans, thousands of them not going to the game, cannot watch it live because STV say, well, no, there's a more relevant contest happening elsewhere. And after years of big talk about how the club would be further modernised to compete with the game's best, David Murray's answer in 1996 was not a foreign coach or better discipline or new ideas or even a breakaway league. It was to employ a former Celtic player to watch football on his television. In the wake of the Ajax defeat, news broke that Kenny Dalglish, who had recently left his director of football role at Blackburn, he had left his managerial one a while ago, was due to take up the same position at Ibrox. Now that quickly changed to a chief of scouting with a budget that could bring in Europe's best. The Daily Record story, my goodness, he was just throwing darts at the continent's best players, established players, upcoming talent, Overmars, Kluivert, Rye, Cantona and Sean Dundee and Emmanuel Petit. In the end, it was basically working for Murray's Carnegie Sports International Company, trying to bring names from sports and showbiz to Loch Lomond to play golf. And he would watch games on his television at home in Southport with this massive satellite dish that he had. And if he saw a player, he could do it as a turn. It was a farce. Dalglish became manager of Newcastle in January. And if you remember, Walter Smith stormed out of an interview with Radio Clyde after the 2-2 draw against Raith Rovers when someone asked him about it. Andy, the Dalglish thing, the Champions League thing, it's all a bit tawdry. The vision seems to have just disappeared. The genuine ambition seems to have disappeared. Murray's scratching around here.
I've got to watch your say here because I get interviewed by Sky TV coming off the bus at Stars Park and asked my opinion on it. And it's on my Facebook. I'll put it on Twitter if I can find it.
I forgot about this.
That's right, you remember it. So I'm a spotty 20-year-old and... I'm like, aye, great news, this will help us get the best players in Europe kind of thing. But, you know, we didn't know that it was spin because he was doing something for Murray's organisation. It wasn't a Rangers super scout. The angle at the time by the press was that he was a former Celtic player, a Celtic legend, let's face it, working for Rangers, and it was never really the case. And it was a bit of a headline grabber, but there was zero substance to it in the end up. But at the time, it created waves.
Anyone know what was so special about the Ozair game?
Rangers strips, yeah.
Yeah, French TV, who did bother to show it live. You couldn't advertise alcohol, so Rangers had to get Centre Parks to sponsor the top that night. A fitting irony that the Champions League campaign finished with holidaymakers just as it started. But all of this, not ideal preparation then for that trip to Parkhead, where Rangers were going into the second Old Firm game of the season behind Celtic in the table for the first time since the 4th of November 1989.
There's a slip by O'Neill. And Laudrup to win. Rangers look for a goal and get one! In the 8th minute from Brian Laudrup. Gascoigne's already had his penalty saved for Rangers. It's Pierre van Hooijdonk to keep his nerve for Celtic and keep them top of the table. And Gorham has matched Kerr's achievement. This game is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Right, I could lecture on this, I think, for an hour. I will try not to.
Basketball.
It was basketball, actually. And you're talking about a tense moment in a tense season. We're used to a bit more caginess, perhaps. This was a brilliant game of football. I was there that night. First time I'd gone without my dad. I was there with my pal, so, 15. First time I'd gone to Parkhead since it was kind of renovated, and it was noisy and it was high. And it was a breathless game of football. It was on Thursday night for Sky. Right at the end, Andy Gray says, "You carry on, Martin. I'm absolutely speechless. This game is unbelievable. Unbelievable." And it really was, Andy. Just about everything. The goal... I think I would be the same as just about everyone else in the ground, including Stuart Kerr, Celtic's new young goalkeeper replacing Gordon Marshall, who assumed that Laudrup would take just another touch. You don't really see it well in the camera view because it's flat and it's to the side, but we're right behind that, quite high up, and he could cut up a wee bit more space, open up the angles a wee bit better. You just expect him to take one more touch. He doesn't. He doesn't have much to play with, but he hits it right in the bullseye. And all the talk was about Celtic, they've got the ascendancy. They're in better form. Rangers are wobbling. We're going to come at you with everything and the passion and all of this, and we're going to run over the top of you. For younger listeners, this was very like the build-up to the Old Firm game back in February of this year, 2022. Rangers lost 3-0, of course. In terms of the chat, in terms of the feeling about what Rangers were going to have to withstand. 8 minutes and that's bust. And everything that happens, of course, you know, Rangers, yes, Celtic had a lot of possession, Andy. Obviously, a lot of shots in goal, but Rangers just kept creating the best chances. Alberts hadn't quite manifested himself as an Old Firm specialist. He missed Christ knows how many chances. Gascoigne missed that penalty. I think wanted to take it after Loudrup said no chance again. He wanted to make further amends, of course, for what had happened. And then, with what, 7 minutes to go, people around me, people watching at home, nearly passed out. Albert's through and goal. I'm not going to shoot because I've missed how many chances. I'm just going to take care out the game, roll it to Van Vossen, and who was 8 yards from an empty goal. Somehow the ball wasn't where it should be. Somehow a remarkable game wasn't over. Somehow those precious 3 points weren't yet saved. And somehow this bloody tension continued. He was done. He'd actually made quite an impressive start to the season. Andy, 9 goals, I think. And an incredible goal at Rugby Park from an impossible angle. No one remembered how he lifted the ball over that bar. I've no idea. But this is 83 minutes. How are you coping with this? Because I don't think I'd experienced anything like it at the time. I don't think I have since an Old Firm game anyway.
So I was coping because I was in the house with, I think, 6-pack of Red Stripe. I didn't have a ticket. And I think before this game, they played the Sky showed a youth game, a Rangers Celtic youth game before it. And so I'd probably settled in about 5 o'clock with these cans of lager, strong lager. And I shared a dressing room, believe it or not, with Stuart Kerr in later years, and we go around to talking about not just this game but this period, and his words were, and they were genuine, that their whole team were absolutely terrified of Brian Loudrup, which is no surprise, but the next sentence was when he was in his own half.
Yeah.
they knew what he could do from anywhere on the pitch, and never was it more exemplified than in this game, because the goal you speak of, Martin, Brian O'Neill, the mistake, I mean, is laughable, but yeah. if you dive into the psyche of him, he probably knows that Loudrup's near him. And that shot, because as you say, he takes it early, it's not really orthodox, because any other player is going to keep going and get closer to the goal and make it a better chance statistically. XG didn't exist, but the XG would have been better the closer they go, but he takes it, and, you know, Loudrup's shooting was underrated. It's not something we talk about a lot, but he had a good shot on him, an accurate and powerful shot without much backlift, and it was an arrow to the heart, because they thought they were going to win. They thought, in their usual romanticised bullshit way, that this was their time, and the Tommy Burns Cavalier football was going to actually... Yeah. This was where it turned, and they were going to get ahead of us with something meaningful and go on and stop 9 in a row. There was many times over this period that we burst our bubble, but this burst our bubble.
Alan, we've gone through all this. This game should be buried. Rangers should be 3 or 4 nil up, incredibly, because we certainly do not expect that. I think it's probably fair to say going into that game. But yeah. Those cliches about scoring when you're on top and finishing your chances and not coming back to bite you, of course
every time they laugh, Martin, when a player misses and they can have a wee laugh, we turn to each other, don't we, and you'll say we'll pay for that.
Yeah,
you can tell, can't you? Yeah.
And it looked as if we were going to, 3 minutes from time, Richard Goff charges right through Simon Donnelly, it's the stick on of all stick on penalties, and look, Van Hooijdonk's good. He's good from the spot, and Gorham, for all his heroics, he's not really renowned as a penalty stopper. And you're kind of, it's frustration that we had this, what a huge win. We had it sorted, yeah. And now the best we're going to get is probably a point, because they've got 3 minutes plus added time. They're going to be starving and ravenous for a winner here. But nothing on this night should be taken for granted. It was a better penalty than Gascoigne's, but still not brilliant. Gorham dives the right way, saves it. And again, we have got some low moments in this episode, guys. I mean, the event itself was one of the biggest highs I've ever had in the stadium. If you're watching on the telly, as Andy was, with his tinnies. let's be honest, we can see what Gorham says, and you know, we're all adults here, and I use the Guardian quotation marks. He almost certainly calls Van Hooydonk a black bastard. Van Hooydonk has bust his, knocked his teeth out in a previous game. There's history there. Gorham writes, when I saved the penalty, I lost it for a bit and shouted a few expletives that I regret now. We had a pass though, and he's called me a lot worse than I called him. Didn't make me proud of it though. Pressure cooker really is something else. Tommy Burns gets sent off for questioning the officiating, which on the night was superb. It's Hugh Dallas. All the big calls are correct. He'd already been fined $3,000 for threatening a referee early in the season. And you see Smith, especially after the Van Vossen miss, being a bit, by his standards, a bit of a jack-in-the-box up in the stand.
Aye, yeah.
He still has the kind of composure about him. But that save, that moment, it will not surprise you. The Rangers should have had two goals after it, given just the amount of breakaway chances that we had. It was a remarkable finish to a remarkable game.
Absolutely one of the best I'd ever seen. Andy, I think I was in Grosch, you know, the bottles with the wee tops. So what had happened was my sales director, we used to have conferences in Eastbourne, you know, kind of Grand Hotel and Brighton and things. So a lovely hotel over in Cheltenham, we're away, Three Light Whip, everyone's got to go there. But my sales director's from Northern Ireland, quite a good blue nose. So permission for Alan to go elsewhere. So I'm in the room service. I think to start off with, Andy, it was a few bottles of Grosch and then it was more. Just as you said, the game was breathtaking. But I remember at the end of it, as you say, he came off his line, didn't he? Him and Van Hooydonk, and there's a couple more. But I did that old, you know, the joy out of friends thing, you know, where you walk back in and my director spotted me because he's a big gambler as well, and he's put £100 or £200 on Rangers as well at that point in time. Because I'd said to him, no, we should do it. But he spotted me across the crowded one. So I come over and he's like, how do we do? I went, oh, Loudrop scored first real early on. Yeah, fuck you, beauty. Went through it. We were through it. Oh. And then, so 1-0, 1-0. And they get a penalty. Ah, oh, you can tell him. And obviously at that, Gorham saved it. Fucking grabs me, jumps me up on top of your table and so on. So the celebrations went on. But it was just such an amazing night, you know. And I think, like you said as well, Martin, at the start of it, how were you feeling before it? I don't know. There was just that this is a biggie. You know, they were getting close to us. But just by doing this and getting out of Dodge with that win, I don't know, it just gave us this is just going to push us on, you know, to further success. So, but no, just and as I say, with all the Old Firm games I've seen, even the 4-each one at Ibrox, the 3-each and so on, I don't know, this one, Walter Smith mentioned it as well, that we were brilliant in terms of counter-attacking as well. The amount of times we just hit them, as you say, with pace, with people running channels and so on, but we just couldn't get that one. But like, it was just absolutely one of my best kind of Old Firm games. Just a pity, unlike you, Martin, I wasn't at the blinking thing.
It was... I'd have it up there with any Old Firm I've ever been to. It just and the fox running the laps around the pitch just to give us all a breather. It was an incredible night and a huge bonus. Tommy Burns, after it's still quite wrapped up in his romantic ideals, despite the glaring evidence of 8 games without any success, he said, "Great things are built from perseverance and we will not change our style of play. It will one day get us to where we want to be." Well, after a very difficult 6 weeks, Rangers were renewed in the belief about where they were going. Top of the league again and back to Parkhead the following Sunday for the Coca-Cola Cup final against Hearts.
Loudrop away from Ritchie. McCoist! Petrich, chance on there for Moore, it's put in by McCoist! Cameron playing it in for Fulton. Great goal by Fulton! The Coca-Cola Cup final has come alive! Oh, it's great play again by McCann! Gascoigne breaks into a shitty position. He's done it! Well, can Hearts come back again? Here's Gascoigne once more.
Andy, I know you were at this one because we've talked about this in the Time Cap show. National Stadium undergoing its, Christ knows what, phase of redevelopment. It started in 1991, but it'll be out for a couple of years again. And this performance, I think, exemplified why this team was so great, but I would also argue that it served as a notice period for that greatness. I think Hearts fancied themselves, they did that Hampden humiliation, of course, but again, we're talking themselves up. Nearly never went ahead, if you remember. It was Baltic, the pitch inspection at lunchtime, absolutely freezing that day. It didn't look like it was going to go any other way in those empty opening minutes. McCoys gets a double, quite quick. Rangers are superb, and then we stop. And then we get complacent and scrappy. Hearts are allowed back into the game. Stevie Fulton gets one before half-time. And then Gascoigne and McCoist have this incredible row right at the end. Gascoigne, I think, expected him to be somewhere. He wasn't. They had a big fight. That continues into the dressing room. Gascoigne escapes. And how does he escape? Well, he goes to the players' lounge and orders himself a brandy, possibly a double brandy. Okay, if that's how he deals with it, Walter and Archie just shook their head. It was Rangers defence, Davey Robertson, Alec Clell in the first half, Craig Moore in the second, who looked like they'd maybe had a few brandies, to be honest, because Neil McCann was terrorising them down that left-hand side. And eventually, they got themselves back into the game, back level, deservedly so. And it just looked like it was heading in one direction, and then what happens next is Paul Gascoigne's life, his career in microcosm. This constant state of hypertension, which, if he's frustrated, leads him to lashing out against loved ones and acrimony, but when he's in control of football, it's resulted in serenity and poise. 4 minutes, Hearts were level. And he takes about 40 yards from goal, shifts his body weight one way, Gary Mackay sold, and then there's this fear amongst the Hearts defence. They just stop, and he just caresses, curls the ball past Rousey, and then the second is just that control and bravery, using Charlie Miller as an accomplice. The goal's against Aberdeen in reverse, really. And it's everything he's been going through, not looking like it apart from that Motherwell hat trick. You're the momentum of a cup final. If you're a neutral, that old Brian Moore, it's only going to be, or Kevin Keegan, there's only one team going to win it from here. And then he just gave me the ball. And that really was him, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, this game, I remember vividly, because as you say, it was freezing. The snow was piled up outside of the park. You get to see the other side of Parkhead. I mean, the area, because you're in the Celtic end, so we're parked at the Fords and stuff like that. It was being in a foreign country, really. And the game itself, the game's done by the 26th, 27th minute when McCoy scores, because we're well on top. Hearts were nowhere near it. It's going to plan, because we do expect to beat Hearts on days like this. And you're cruising, and then it was a minute or 2 minutes before half-time, they get a goal back. And even at that, you're thinking of, that was needless, but you're still expecting to win a game. But when they equalise, it's one of the moments where you're like, what is happening here? We've went from being totally in control in a cup final, we went on in the cup, to actually Hearts winning the ascendancy. And Neil McCann was the key man. Neil McCann announced himself.
It was magnificent, yeah.
It was absolutely superb that day. And the Gascoigne recovery, if you want to call it that, genius is near the word for it. I mean, that first goal to get the ball where they go to, make the moves, and then curl it in to the corner round the goalie. It's not for an angle, it's kind of central. And the second goal's pure Durant. That's when I see that goal, that's Durant in his pomp. The 1-2 and the unstoppable fast movement that just rips a hole through the box. It was a brilliant, brilliant piece of artistry, two pieces of artistry for Gascoigne. Within 2 minutes, the cup's won again. This was why, when we're talking about the start of the programme, about turning a blind eye, the ashamed notion that we think about other things other than the human tragedy that we've seen in that marriage, when you see the pictures of Cheryl. This unfortunately, is why the warped mind of Andy McGowan football supporter even contemplated that, you know. And to go back to Don Findlay, it wasn't far off the truth. To be perfectly honest, I think nobody's thinking about the fact that he's a wife beater or he's a kind of no far off a degenerate alcoholic, and we didn't know that he was going in the players' lounge at halftime that day. It was what you accepted for moments like that, because moments like that are why we go to the football.
Alan, I don't want to talk about what's going to happen next, because that's for next week's show, but these 10 days, Rangers are up against it. The momentum is disappearing. Celtic top of the league, and now we're 3 points clear. We've won another cup.
Yeah,
Loudrup's been brilliant one night. Gascoigne's been great the next. This is the greatness of that team, as we felt at the time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're right. And I think what it did as well, I talked about the blow that we struck against Celtic, obviously, you know, Parkhead. But then this as well, I would have been another wee blow thinking, geez, oh, there they go again. Many would have been watching the final thinking they're going to slip up. Not only have they done us now at Parkhead, that's them, 4-3 against Hearts, and it seems to be rolling on. We're getting to that time of the season as well, you know, over the kind of New Year period where Rangers typically do well. So, no, I think it's struck another great kind of blow, you know, really in our kind of side in terms of that one. Obviously, as you say, we'll not get into the future of it, but no, I love the game. I seem to remember, I don't know about you two guys too, I think the delayed, we were kind of, they didn't open the turnstiles early.
That's right.
Because we're thinking, is it going to go ahead or not?
That's right. You know? And what memory you've got, Alan?
Oh, I don't know about that. I can't even put it on this morning, Andy. But I remember that. It was myself and David Best again. But we were in the big covered, where the jungle would have been, but high up, restricted view there.
Yeah,
but,
I think I was up there as well.
You know, so, no, absolutely brilliant. And I must admit, like the rest of you, obviously when Gaza scored, I'm not thinking anything about all the rest of it. You're just thinking again that we've won, you know, we've won a trophy. So, really good game, but certainly, I don't know, it was certainly kind of underlined potentially what was going to happen further down the line, yeah.
Anyone talking about Wee McCann on the way back up the road?
Oh, God, I mean, he was without a doubt man of the match with Neil McCann.
But there was no chat about signing him because we all presumed he was a Celtic supporter.
Yeah, he was.
And the way he played against us, he was fairly, I say he was despised, but he was one of the players that we... I didn't like. I never anticipated him being a Rangers player.
Because he gets stuck in as well. Because Wee McCann would have fought with anyone. He was that type that would get stuck in. But I do remember us all talking about, oh my God, you know, Neil McCann just. And okay, you could say maybe some of the Rangers players were off it. But I would say, to be honest with you, the way McCann, if anything, he was making them look stupid. You know, yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been a difficult one in part. I thank you for your honesty and reflection. There's been some joy and triumph, as always, on the show to balance it up. Thank you, Alan.
No, thanks, Martin. As you say, difficult, but it was good going over, obviously, some of that period as well. And good to be back with Andy as well on this, yeah.
Thank you, Andrew. You got to do history properly.
You've got to do history properly. As long as you don't get cancelled now, Martin, let's just make it clear that was the views of 20-year-old Andy. Pissed off. It's not the views of 46-year-old Andy nowadays.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. The spark of genius just when it's required, said Jock Brown on the microphone on that cup final. But he could have been talking about a lot of Rangers games since 1994. So often tired, missing key players, in trouble, or bereft of creativity, this group battled hard to stay in touch and relied upon magic to do the rest. For this particular magician, however, it was the final act. The common consensus that night was that a line had been drawn under a troubled period in the most emphatic way, but everyone, including the man himself, was in denial. "I haven't been myself for a few weeks for reasons you all know about," Gascoigne said afterwards. "I'm starting to come to terms with what happened. I'm getting help, and my personal life is not too bad. I feel I can concentrate on my football now, and hopefully this is the start of good things to come." He would, of course, feature in more Rangers wins and pick up another medal, but Paul Gascoigne would never grab a big game for Rangers in that signature style ever again. He would remain a Rangers player for 16 more months, but his days as a Rangers star were over. Next week, the winter of 96-97 sees 9 in a row really being won, and a platform being provided that should have seen 10 and a lot more. Seb, Joe and Eric Bowe. Until next time, bye for now.
Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.